Welcome to the Week in IndyCar, the Marshall Pruitt podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. Great episode here. Our man, Tony Kanaan. I tell you, I wish we had a couple of hours to get to all of your questions. And clearly, despite being IndyCar's elder statesman, he has not lost an ounce of popularity. Definitely, as shown by all of the awesome questions that y'all sent in through Facebook, through Twitter, and also through Reddit. So we'll get to Tony here in just a little bit. As we open the show, and as we normally do, touch on a couple of quick newsy items, at least, here for the off-season, and also get to my favorite question of last week. Just completed the final test of the year with all three of Team Penske's drivers at Sebring. Also, Marcus Ericsson, who took part there, actually making his IndyCar debut. Signed to drive for Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports in the number 7 Honda without ever having turned a lap in one of the cars. So from what my boy Will Power told me when he rang this morning to catch up about the test, he said at least from what he observed, it looked like Marcus really just slotted right in, was quick. Doesn't recall exactly what the lap times were in the afternoon, comparing how the three Penske boys did compared to Marcus, but Will did mention that for the times he saw from the morning at Sebring, Marcus was right there, you know, not saying he was faster than them, but was definitely a case of someone who appeared to grasp and get the Dallara DW12 Honda IndyCar experience down somewhat quickly. Granted, Sebring short course is just that. It's a shortened version of the big circuit. It's not the most technically complex place, but regardless, it's a perfect location for Marcus to get his first feeling for an IndyCar, so glad to hear that that went well. Been hearing some conflicting items about the health and vitality of the Harding-Steinbrenner team. Wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, that they're definitely waiting on money to come in to be able to do things. And while some of my sources have been impeccable about those struggles, I've also heard from some other areas that things are actually going to be okay. So I'm going to go with the latter option and definitely hope that indeed money, sponsorship, everything is going to be showing up as needed there. And yeah, hopefully we can just put those question marks behind as we get a little bit closer to 2019. I think we're also going to be hearing a final bit of news as to which engine manufacturer we'll be powering that team here very soon. We did have the, I guess we could call it the non-confirmation, or the confirmation of things that were already kind of confirmed and well-known, that being that Chevrolet will support Fernando Alonso and the McLaren team in their Indy 500 bids. So happy to hear that. Heard from someone else in the paddock, not criticizing or complaining in any way, but just mentioning something else to think about here, which, interesting angle. So within Honda, within Chevy, if you think about the engine techs that support each team, we do certainly have a situation where there are some who are, say, better and or preferred over others, if we want to think of it that way, in terms of tuning and drivability. High level of skill and quality, obviously, among all of those who plug into the various Chevy and Honda-powered cars in the IndyCar series. Also a case, like drivers, like race engineers, there are some who are definitely a little bit better and or able to attune themselves with the needs of the team and driver a little bit better than some others. Just had an interesting voice from the paddock say, wonder how that might go down if we think about this effectively one-off of McLaren coming to race at the Indy 500 with Chevy power, with a high-profile driver, certainly very high-profile guy in Alonso, but will, say, one of the star engine techs, someone who's really known for doing excellent tuning and really making drivers super happy, well, one of those folks who've maybe been plugged into a team for the season leading up to Indy be pulled out of line and moved over to this high-profile effort? Or will the Chevy teams, who know who they like and know who they want, make sure that maybe this little interloping effort, this one-off effort, does not receive someone who is considered to be a star, or definitely a top draft pick among engine techs, not wanting to give up anything that they really hope to have as an advantage they can hold over McLaren. So, anyways, not saying there's anything to that, but it's just an interesting angle to consider. Could there be any, you know, extra effort to make sure this very high-profile team and driver get someone that maybe someone else would normally have or want if they weren't participating in the 500? So, anyways, that's one of the great things about IndyCar during the off-season. Lots of people have lots of opinions and thoughts about many things, and some of them may go places, some of them may go absolutely nowhere. Let's move on to one of my favorite parts of every show, that being picking my favorite question from the previous week. As a result of what our man Anthony Pienta sent in, he said, "Marshall, let's have a race in current cars, but the drivers are actually team owners who used to drive. Who would win? They have to drive their own team machinery, by the way. I count Michael Andretti, Bobby Rahal, Brian Herta, Larry Foyt, AJ Foyt, Chip Ganassi, Michael Shank, Sam Schmidt, Dale Coyne, and Roger Penske as being eligible." He said that Ed Carpenter wouldn't count because he's active. Who still has it, even considering age and beer bellies? And so that came in from Anthony during last week's show, where Larry Foyt was our Week in IndyCar guest. I chose Brian Herta just because among all the names listed, he has been the most active in recent years, so I think it'd be easier for him. I mean, Brian just raced here in October, so I think it'd be easier for Brian to get back in the groove compared to some others. Just like that question quite a bit. And courtesy of our friends at Toronto Motorsports, who for, I believe, the whole year now, maybe even longer, I could be forgetting, but one of our great and enduring partners here with the Marshall Pruitt Podcast and our Week in IndyCar show, in awarding a Week in IndyCar t-shirt to the person who asks my favorite question from the previous week. So, Anthony, send me a direct message with your address and size preference for that Week in IndyCar t-shirt, and our pals at torontomotorsports.com will get you hooked up here ahead of the holidays. All right, let's make a swift move over to the questions that you sent in for me, specifically, hashtag me personally, that you sent in for me. Before we get to Tony's, and let's see, we'll go with Daniel Kincaid. Starting off with, will McLaren be helping Andretti Autosport to develop their shock absorbers at all? Don't have a direct answer for you, Daniel. I don't know. It's really not something, believe it or not, they're keen on talking about right now. I can tell you that if we at least use history as a guide, I did watch where the Harding-Steinbrenner team, what we now know as the Harding-Steinbrenner team, specifically the Harding team, both at Portland and Sonoma, where they did have support from this great, great Andretti organization in testing with Colton Herta at Portland, and then when both Colton and Pato O'Ward raced for the team at Sonoma, did see the Andretti team wheel over a rhino case of dampers and such to go onto the cars, and then I believe get taken off and taken back at the end of the day, very much like hot and secret property, not wanting anyone to have free rein and access to. So knowing that they did have their own technology, the Andretti Technologies folks did have some of the GoFast parts that are very unique to the team that they were making available to Harding, and then taking back, and then returning, and then taking back. Purely guessing here, but it would not surprise me to learn that in the Andretti support of McLaren at the Indy 500, that something similar might take place. Maybe when we get a little bit closer to 2019, or even the Indy 500, maybe I can get a deeper and more direct answer on this. But we have at least seen how this works, with Andretti collaborating with another team, and making their, you know, very valuable GoFast parts available, but definitely something that they keep within their control in how and when those pieces are used. Related to that, we have a question from our man. Thank you again for sending in something, John Sable. John says, so how much hell is the paddock going to raise over the McLaren, Chevy, Andretti deal? I think with some of the announcements of how the Andretti Steinbrenner Harding deal will play out for 2019, a lot of that hell in general will be greatly reduced. But certainly when we get to the Indy 500, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. There's nothing stopping or forbidding this. It certainly pushes into an area that lacks comfort, specifically for the engine manufacturers, but there is nothing to stop an Andretti Autosport from helping any team if it wanted to, and if that other team sought that help. So, yeah, comfort margins, zero, but regulatory issues or otherwise, completely free to do what they do. So, we also have the part that's hard to ignore, John, that, yeah, complaining in IndyCar, like NASCAR, like F1, like IMSA, it's a great pastime. If people aren't complaining and accusing others of doing something wrong, I'd be concerned. I'd think that there was actually some sort of flu going around or out-of-body experiences. So, yeah, I'm sure we are going to hear something if and when the McLaren-Alonso thing is running towards the front in practice or otherwise at Indy. I'm sure we are going to hear the complaints even more, calls to IndyCar to step in and intervene, and I don't know. As you might know, if you've listened to any of the Week in IndyCar, Week in Sports Car, whatever podcast that I do on a regular basis, not a big fan of writing a trillion rules into the rule book, regulating every little thing and policing every little thing. Hey, if they want to do this, they can do it. And I appreciate that at least so far, IndyCar has not stepped in with rules to prevent such a collaboration. All right, let's go to Reddit and the Spannerer, who says, it's all about the second McLaren seat in my mind this week. Jerry Hildebrand, Stefan Wilson, Juan Montoya, Jimmy Johnson, any of those outsiders in with a chance. Well, we know from a recent Week in IndyCar episode with Oriol Servia, who many mentioned as being the perfect home-based teammate for Spain's Fernando Alonso, that he is not on their short list, long list, or any list that we know of, at least. I would say, of the other names you mentioned, you know, Jimmy Johnson has said he'd love to drive an IndyCar. Not sure about a high-speed oval, though. Montoya, hard to see how Roger lets an employee, although he is now strictly a IMSA Daytona Prototype International employee, but hard to see how Roger lets one of his employees compete against him to try and take the Indy 500 win away, something that Roger wants more than anything, so we can probably take him off the list. Haven't had a chance to catch up with Jarrett Hildebrand. My initial thought would be if there's going to be two cars from John Reinbold again, he would be in one of them just as he was in May. Stefan Wilson's another interesting name and angle. He does have a little bit of old association with McLaren. I'd love to see him in it. I don't know if that will happen. I know that returning to Andretti Autosport is obviously something he would welcome doing. So, of the names that you mentioned, those outsiders, I don't know if any of them have a high percentage shot or even any real percentage shot of that second McLaren seat. So, that's going to be another watch this space item. All right, we've got two more questions to go. Another one from Reddit, Ruslar, who says, did the recent announcements for Juncos, that being the Juncos Racing IndyCar team, recent announcement for Juncos' new IMSA program, with IndyCar driver Kyle Kaiser in for the Rolex 24, Rene Binder, who is also part of the IndyCar team, in for the endurance rounds, does that have any impact on their IndyCar lineup? And are drivers in Juncos' orbit choosing to drive an IMSA over IndyCar? Spoke with Ricardo about a week ago, and I still need to get that interview up. He mentioned that it kind of aligns a little bit with your question, but he didn't say that it was specifically an issue here. But he did say that the struggles to find sponsorship for the IndyCar program to give them greater control over who drives their one or both cars, because he does have a second IndyCar chassis built up, both Chevy powered, and he does have intents to run both at the 500. But he said definitely having more issues at this time of the year than he's ever had, just, I guess, across the board, excluding IMSA. So both IndyCar Now and also Indy Lights and such on the road to Indy, it worries me that someone like Ricardo, who's usually been very adept at finding drivers for all of his Road to Indy programs, and now again more recently with IndyCar, that that's been a greater struggle. You'd hope it would be the opposite direction, but it hasn't been. So in the interview that I'll put up here shortly, he does admit, yeah, there's not a lot going on the IndyCar front right now, working with both Kyle Kaiser and Binder to hopefully do more IndyCar. But I think what we are seeing with Juncos' IMSA Cadillac DPI effort is, for a smallish amount of money by comparison to IndyCar, some of his drivers can go have fun, do some endurance racing a couple months before the IndyCar season kicks off, and that's maybe a good fit for them. What I would hope to close here is that we aren't talking about money that Kaiser and Binder have had, and instead of using that money to do a greater number of IndyCar races, they're actually taking away their ability to do more IndyCar with Ricardo in an effort to do and expand into sports cars. So we'll see what happens here, but I think you might be on to something, that they're finding it easier to sell seats, definitely cheaper seats, in IMSA, now that Ricardo has that option with prototype, compared to getting a lot of folks plugged into their IndyCar effort. Let's close with an interesting one. Last item here I've saved, interesting phrasing in the question here. Wanted to save this just because it is maybe a little bit more wider reaching and thought-provoking in that sense. Comes in from Don Davis. Don says, Marshall, it seems with each passing day that IndyCar CEO Mark Miles and NBCSN President John Miller are quite satisfied with having a white nationalist in their broadcast booth during IndyCar races. First, he, and I think we can assume he's referring to Paul Tracy, upsets Robert Wicken's parents, and now this, and I believe this is referring to the somewhat recent Facebook dust-up with a person that we have written about and many others have written about. What if he shoots off again during the Indy 500? I guess first thing that comes to mind, Don, is although I have not or did not pay much attention to Paul's online persona for many years, and it wasn't willfully ignoring it, just, you know, one of the little secrets that I share with folks, although I do my best to engage others on social media and post whatever is happening in my world, I don't end up having a lot of time or taking a lot of time to keep track of everyone else's. So might be more a case of ignorance being blissful here, but a lot of the, other than hearing others say, you know, in the media center, on pit lane, over lunch somewhere, about something that Paul said or did that was just really hard or cruel or mean or ugly online, hadn't seen a lot of it, just to be perfectly frank, before the most recent dust-up here, and haven't taken time to then look back and see some of the things. And the, happy Martin Luther King Day, posting a photo of himself from back in the day in a cool cigarette-sponsored car, where you go, really? You know, I think Paul has driven for more tobacco-sponsored teams than almost any other. Could have chosen any car, Marlboro, you name it. Could have chosen so many other things, players. Instead, on Martin Luther King Day, you pick the photo of yourself standing next to the cigarette that has been targeted towards African-American audiences, and you could say obviously has led to many deaths, cancer, and otherwise as a result. That's what you choose, and then you want to play it off, oh, hey, it's just a photo of me standing next to a race car. That's racist behavior, and that's one of many. Any claims or denials, just pure nonsense. There's been a willful asking or request for folks to just allow that side. Oh, that, I didn't mean anything by you. Boy, you're the racist for thinking that. No, this is who you are. So I'm comfortable with that. I have no question about that. And the things that I've heard directly from the man's mouth this year in particular. There's one incident. I won't go into it now. Maybe I will a little bit later. But just walked away going, boy, that sure is a window into a very dark, racist side of you. So I'm comfortable with that because I've seen it, witnessed it. I know that to be what it is. The white nationalist part, Don, yeah, I think that might be a leap. I can tell you from my own family history, where I know that there has been one or more Klan members with the last name Pruitt. Again, something that I know firsthand, having experienced it firsthand. You can be racist and nasty and disgusting without being a white nationalist. They aren't necessarily one and the same. I'd also say that, again, I'm assuming, I'm not sure. Again, I'm just trying to parse some of this out from something that doesn't have a lot of extra details added in, but Paul's obviously been a big fan of President Trump, definitely not a big fan of former President Obama. Again, I, being a big fan of President Trump and also being a racist, does not add up to being a white nationalist in any way or automatically. I know many folks. I do have genuine, actual, close friends who are big supporters of President Trump and could not be farther from being anything one might accuse Paul Tracy of being of. So, again, you can be all of these things individually without them adding up to any kind of white nationalism charge. So, if you have come to that conclusion, Don, I'm not making any claim or accusation on that, whether it's right or wrong. I'm just saying from this end, I have seen the racism part. That's an open and shut case, period. Fact for me. White nationalist side, have not seen that in Paul. As someone who knows him fairly well, like many in the paddock, I think if there was that real thing inside of him, it would have come out by now. So that covers off that part. To close here, as for Mark Miles, John Miller, Paul shooting off on the biggest IndyCar stage at the Indy 500 in the booth. Again, unless I'm wrong, and that could very well be, I haven't seen, or nor do I recall him saying anything that could be considered racist, nationalist, off-color, oh my God, hit the mute button type affairs during his time on NBCSN so far. I would say to close, though, NBCSN has given Paul one or more urgings to dial back this dark ugliness that lives inside of him and at least keep it to himself, keep it off of social media. He has not succeeded in that, obviously. Would say that if you look at some of what he has posted recently, and I have actually made an effort to look, it has been as fluffy and vanilla and shots of puppy dogs and just the sky is blue and smiles and warmth live in my heart. So I think we could say he realizes that he needs to portray a very different side of himself if he wants to be considered for a return to NBCSN. Do know, as I mentioned when this thing flared up a couple weeks ago, however long it was, that his contract with NBCSN concluded at the end of the 2018 season, meaning they would need to extend a new contract to him. To no one's surprise, NBCSN has not been super chatty wanting to talk about this topic. I don't know what we are going to find when they do announce their broadcast team. I know that IndyCar, along with IMSA, is actually at NBCSN right now, NBC Sports, today, Wednesday the 5th, talking about 2019 plans and so on. Can't say if and when news of broadcast teams and otherwise will follow, but would I be surprised if, when they do announce their 2019 IndyCar booth and pit lane squad, that Paul Tracy would be left off of it? Wouldn't surprise me at all. And I know that in speaking to some who are very close to the man, they would not be surprised as well. It's not a case where he can't come back if they do make that choice. It's not a case where he can't improve himself and actually be honest with folks and say, yeah, I have been a real dirtbag in many regards, been a genuine racist. I am seeking some sort of self-improvement, trying to enlighten myself, soften that hardness inside of me towards people who aren't my color. I mean, we can all improve. So I know there's a little bit of a California kumbaya here to close, but yeah, unless we're talking about he just murdered a whole bunch of people, I think it's really hard for murderers to just completely turn their lives around and be polar opposites of that murderous person. Not saying that's impossible either, but you know, we're not talking about murder. We're just talking about ugliness and public ugliness, and one that could and can and has embarrassed employers. So can't say whether he'll be back. Would be surprised if he is. If he is, I bet the leash for termination is going to be shorter than ever. But whether he's back or not, I would just say that one of the cool things about a guy like Paul Tracy is he is smart enough to know, like he has done in many other situations in his career where things have not gone according to plan or he has not achieved everything that he's wanted to, that if he decides to work really hard and become a better person, human being, forget the racing part, just a better human being, he can. So entirely up to him. We will find out if NBCSN agrees that having him back in the booth is the right call. And extending a new contract is something that they should do. All right, we're all done with my part. Now, let's get to our man, super awesome Tony Kanaan, who was a question-answering machine. All right, thanks to Cooper Tires. Off we go with Tony Kanaan. Dude, I don't know if you realize this, you got a lot of people that like you.
Yeah, I mean, when we announced we're doing it, I have the alerts on my phone, Facebook and Twitter and all the social media, and my phone started to like buzz every 3 seconds. So this is awesome. Obviously, I don't know if it's good or bad, Marshall, because it's either I've been out of the loop for too long or people wanted to know so much stuff. So we're here, we're gonna answer, like we said, you and I, we're gonna answer as many questions as we can in the course of the show. And I'm excited. When I got the notifications, I tried not to read it because I want the element of surprise of the question. So,
see, that's why we love you, man. Well, brother, thank you again for taking some time. I know you're freezing your behind off in Indy right now, but hopefully some of these questions will bring a little bit of warmth to you. We'll start off with general questions because we've got a ton of them, and I'll just overstate the obvious. Thanks for everyone who took time to send these in. They are, by and large, just awesome. So let's go with Jamie Carr first, who says, Tony, as the elder statesman of IndyCar drivers, what thing, either paddle shifting, hand clutch, lots of data acquisition, do you think the young drivers have now, while they're learning their craft, that you wish you had back in the day when you were starting out? And he also asks, is there anything in that area you think young drivers today should not have access to while learning?
No, I think, you know, that's just, you know, that's the technology, right? Everything in the world is being revolving to improving. So I don't take I'm not the type of guy that I'm on that old school to say, this kid's, I wish they would sit. I mean, the only thing that I wish is that the kids nowadays would know how to drive a stick, because I think that's something that any driver should know.
Yeah.
But that is actually not even a possibility anymore, because I don't think we have a modern race car nowadays that actually allow us to do that anyway. So, but no, I mean, I don't, I mean, I think the technology I helped develop even at the time in IndyCar, the pedal shifting and all that stuff. So the speeds are increasing. One of the reasons we started using pedal shifting, because it was much quicker to downshift, and because we're arriving much quicker into the corner and we're braking much deeper into the corner. So it's all about improving lap times and going fast, which I love. So not really. I think it's part of the evolution. It's part of racing. So I wouldn't change anything. But the only thing I would say, I would love these kids. I mean, definitely my kids are learning how to drive a stick regardless. You know, they're only, you know, Leo's 11, but the other two is like 4 and 2, but they will learn. I will save one old car so they can learn how to drive a stick for sure.
Well, I love it, and I hate to admit it, but we have evolved it in our household to where everything we own is an automatic. And
No. So do I, Marshall. I don't have anything yet, but I was telling Lauren that we need to get something, you know. I mean, every car I have is pedal shifting right now, so it's I would love to eventually I'm going to buy something that it's still manual.
Yeah,
and then keep it in the house for the kids to learn how to drive.
I think that's what I'm doing here shortly, actually buying an old manual vehicle for just to remember how to use my left foot while driving. All right, so here's one that's a little bit cheeky. Alan Bandy says, Tony, what's more difficult, training for an Ironman or try not to crap your pants in fear while getting mugged at Taco Bell?
I did not get mugged at Taco Bell. That was Dario and Dixon. So I would say if I was there, that is definitely was going to be something that I'm not looking forward to it. So the Ironman, it's a piece of cake in comparison to that, because I know what I'm doing. I'm in control. But I can tell you that before, back in the days, I got robbed and a gunpoint in Brazil. So that's not a nice feeling. And I will definitely not choose that.
Yeah.
I'll do an Ironman a day to avoid that.
Well, that's the thing. You know, most folks know your story, and it's one of growing up and persevering. And yeah, it's not as if you came to your IndyCar career just floating on clouds of perfection and happiness at all times. So let's see. Let's go to JD Ellis, who says, in a world with no contractual restrictions, what types of machinery would you like to test or use in one-off races?
Anything with a wheel and a steering wheel. I would love to do a NASCAR race. I would love to do a sprint car race. I would love to do, anything that has wheels on it, you know. So, actually just race everything I could. I got so many invitations that I can't do it, so.
Wow. And I guess we got a couple folks who've asked similar things. Jeff Stanton says, you know, are there any tracks you haven't been to that are on your bucket list, etc.? Do you feel like you're kind of in that place, Tony, where, you know, you've done enough, you've done so much and enough in your career where there's nothing left to prove, right? You're in a place where you can do the things that you want. Do you have a mindset of, and now let me start pursuing those things? Or are you in the...
I don't know, for sure, buddy. I mean, as far as tracks, I hate to say it, but I think I've been in every racetrack I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
I've just been around for too long. Look like what Alonso is doing, right? He decided to take a next chapter of his life, and he's doing everything he wants. And I think I'll get to that point. I still love IndyCar so much I'm not in that point. You know what I mean? I know there will be some questions about my future and how long more and performances and things that people start to wonder. But, I will definitely consider doing a bunch of different things once I decide that my full time in IndyCar it's over. But I can tell you the next 2 years is not over yet, so we still have 2 years to talk about it.
I love it. Let's go to Nathan DeRover, who says, I'd love to hear about your experiences helping to film the masterpiece movie known as Driven, and how you feel about the finished production. And he also asks, what are some of your favorite racing films, and what did you think of the Senna? I don't know if I want to call it a documentary. It's kind of a tribute film, but any thoughts looking back on 20-plus years after Driven and favorite racing
films? Yeah, I mean, I had a hard time understanding the Hollywood side of that, because, of course, it was a movie that helped us to promote the series at the time, but it was so many things that are so unreal that, you know, I had a hard time understanding how to cope with that. But it's Hollywood. That's what the director told me at the day. This is Hollywood, my friend. So my role, it was really difficult. I was sleeping on the couch for 30 seconds. So I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed to see that part of Hollywood. I think, to be honest, the movie, at the end, the total production and the way that I was like, it's not a racing movie, right? It was a movie, like a fiction, because so many things that happened there. But I mean, they told us that in the beginning, so I don't think anybody should consider that a racing movie, because it's not. It's a movie. It's a fiction movie that has race cars on it.
If it was done as a cartoon, I think it would have gone over better, because it was more realistic as a cartoon.
100%. And my favorite racing movie is the Senna documentary, or the Senna movie, I would say, for sure.
Wow.
I mean, that is by far, the coolest racing movie I've ever seen.
Andrew C. asks, can you tell your best Steve Horn story? He says, you've seen him give interviews And all with Steven, always interesting to see that interaction. I was just curious if you could share some thoughts or a story about your time driving for Steve.
100%. Steve was a very particular character, you know, and I think I got to know him better, and I got to break into his New Zealander, very standoffish guy. He's very private when you meet him. He's very, like, hardcore. And I have two favorite stories. I tell them real quick so you guys can have more. But one of them is we went to dinner at his house in Columbus, Elio and I, and early in the days when we were racing for him, like the first week we're in Columbus. And we sat at the table, me, Elio, Steve Horn, and Christine Horn. And we had dinner, and we finished dinner. Steve stood up and kind of left, and I thought, you know, he went to the bathroom or he went somewhere. And so we're waiting for dessert. So Christine brought dessert, and I didn't eat. I was waiting for Steve to come back, and I said, she goes, honey, you're not going to eat? I said, no, I'll wait for Steve. She said, no, he went to bed. So just stood up and left, didn't say goodnight, didn't say anything, just left. Another favorite story is the shop. It was a really small shop, and the boys had this little stereo to play music at the shop. But at lunchtime, everybody would leave to lunch, and Steve would eat in the table. Like, we had a little kitchen inside the shop, but it wasn't blocked or anything, and Steve would sit down and have his lunch there. And the boys kept forgetting the stereo on, and he kept asking for days and days in a row, guys, when you leave to lunch, turn the stereo off. I don't like to listen to music. I like to eat in peace, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, after a few days, one of the days he walked into the shop, the stereo was still on, and it was one of the old, you know, that has two speakers in the stereo in the middle. They all connected. Unplugged from the wall, got the saw machine, turned it on, sawed the stereo in half, and put it back in place. Since that day, we didn't have a stereo in the shop ever again.
Oh, I have worked for one very passive-aggressive team boss, and yeah, that behavior is not a total surprise. I love it. Let's see, got a question here from Jeff Hildebrand, hoping you can help with a little bit of input. He says, my grandmother was born and grew up in Santarém in Brazil. He says, I hope to visit there one day. And Jeff asks, is there a Brazilian motorsports museum or something similar that he might visit visiting Brazil to just take a deeper appreciation of racing history?
Yeah, unfortunately, no. And then we're working on that, because I think that is something that, with the history of Emerson, Senna, myself, Rubens, we should definitely should do that. So hopefully I'll start that, but no, we don't have it, unfortunately.
Let's go to our friend Kevin Frederico, who asked you to... these are some hard choices. Tony, if you had a choice to drive a race car piloted by one of your countrymen, which would you choose? Would it be Rubens' 2004 Ferrari, Senna's 89 McLaren MP45, or Emerson Fittipaldi's Penske PC23? Boy, yeah. I don't know how you choose, but is there one?
I don't know how I choose, but I would choose Senna's car, just because it was Senna's car.
Yeah, I mean, and no disrespect to our friend Rubens or Emerson.
Rubens is my best friend, but he would pick that car too, I can tell you that.
Yeah, there's one that stands out as maybe a little bit different than the rest, for sure. All right, we're getting into some seriously fun questions here. Mason Feldman asks, Tony, if we had a tournament-style arm wrestling contest with all the IndyCar drivers in the paddock, who's in the top three? Who's in the bottom three?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I don't want to throw my friends under the bus.
Oh, let's throw them way under the bus.
Top three, Dixon. Dixon's strong, man. He's strong. Newgarden.
What about Connor? He seems compact. Would he be in there maybe?
Nah, I don't know if Connor is that strong, but no offense to Connor. I mean, he's going to go, oh, you're hammering me. No, I'm not. So I would say...
I like those options. What about the, I guess, what are the, a couple that stand out as folks who need to do some, you know, if we want to talk about the bottom three, who would you put on the 2K training list?
Sato.
Really?
You know, Sato is teeny. That's the thing. I'm not saying he's not strong.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're going to arm wrestle, we're talking about arm wrestling here. You know, we're not talking about driving a race car. Let's make clear, you know. Sato, my teammate, Mateus, needs to improve.
Yeah, no argument
the
there.
I would say those two.
All right. Well, we'll put them on. They've been placed on notice. Let's see. So CM16 asks if you can share some thoughts on the funnier side of your young teammate, Mateus Laist.
Yeah, actually, a really chilled guy. He comes from the south of Brazil, which they speak completely different Portuguese than we do. So,
how so? In what way?
It's just slangs. It's different slangs, different ways of mentioning, it's hard because there is no translation for it, but they call, like, I don't know, if you're broke, they have a way of saying broke in a different way. I think in English you have, you know, you go to a couple places in America and I think they have their own slang and their own, like,
yeah,
vocabulary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is funny because I've heard stuff this year that I never heard in my life. That is for sure. He speaks extremely funny Portuguese for us. You guys will never get that because obviously he only speaks English, but that is definitely a funny fact. He only cuts his hair every 6 months, which you can see that. But
I love the kid. My only wish for him next season, Tony, and maybe this is just part of IndyCar PR efforts, but my only hope is for more of Mateus to be brought out and seen by the public and by fans, because I'm not claiming to know the kid super well, but at least from when I got to know him in Indy Lights, I love the kid. I just don't know if fans feel as if they know him very well yet.
But, you know, like, I think the biggest issue this year, it was we had so many good rookies, Marshall. That was, you know, like, unfortunately, it's not just about personality. At the end of the day, it's about performances as well. And you know, with Rickens and Veach and those guys, like, you know, performing the way they did, that's why you guys didn't get to know Mateus a lot, because there was a lot to talk about those other guys.
Yeah, no, fair point. Let's see, let's go to... Oh, this is a good one here. Let's go to Anthony Pienta, who says, Tony, do you track any of your own physiological data during a race? For instance, what's your heart rate through a race? How does it compare to resting heart rate? And how does that data possibly influence your racecraft? So,
yeah. I mean, when I raced for Chip with NTT Data, they had a shirt that measured all that. And you'd be amazed to find out that your heart rate goes to everybody's different, but I top out at 170 BPMs, which some people go to 200, but, and I could get to 168 on a street course, which is crazy, you know, like you're sitting down. I mean, people don't realize that. So with that data in the past 3 years, I was able to learn how my heart rate worked in the race car and actually simulate that to my training. So I have gotten a lot more specific about my training, because, you know, like, if you're a cyclist, you cycle, that's your training for what you do. That is nothing very specific about racing. There was not a lot of research about how our bodies behave in the race car. We know, yes, core, shoulders, this and that, but it wasn't a train that was very specific. In the past 3 years, I was able to simulate that, which is awesome, because nowadays I became more fit for the race car specific because of those data.
Wow, that is brilliant. Let's see, a little bit of a fun one here. Eric Paul says, Tony, at most of the past 10 years during the public drivers meeting the day before the Indy 500, just before you're introduced, I scream, "Tony!" so loud that I usually can't talk for the next 4 days. Do you appreciate gestures like this, and does it help you on race day?
A lot, man. I mean, you know, I say that all the time. The month of May, for me, it gets my head so big because of my fan base there and then the people that cheer for me. So it's always nice. One thing that is bad about our sport, but there's nothing we can do about it, you can't hear the crowd, right? It's probably we had the biggest event in the world that you cannot hear when people cheer for you to pump you up. You know, that's kind of like my next thing in the future. Said we have so much technology. Can we have a device that when the crowd cheers for you, we're able to, like, it's a noise canceling thing to go through? I don't know, but like, can we figure something out? You know, because that's something that I definitely would love to. But I love the energy of the fans. I'm amazed every time I go to the place and people like you, you know, like this guy that loses his voice just screaming my name. That's awesome.
Well, I figure, you know, IndyCar has the ability to trigger the yellow light system in the car remotely. There's so many pieces of data on the dash that pop up, alarms and alerts. We must be able to come up with some sort of, like, fan decibel.
I am 100% sure.
You go over a certain level of decibels with, you know, microphones placed in the crowd, your dash lights up, something. You can raise your hand and, you know, pump your fist. I mean, come on, we can do this. This is IndyCar, man.
100%.
Let's see. Let's go to... Oh, all right, this is a great one. So our guest last week, the amazing... well, 2 weeks ago, I should say, was the amazing Kara Adams from Firestone. And she had a story she told about tire testing with you. And so Chris Rafferty says, in a recent podcast, Kara Adams described how you could feel a slight change in the tire design at a test several years ago. And she was referring to construction in the sidewall. And Chris says, according to Kara, you correctly diagnosed what the change was without having been told.
That's a compliment.
Says, is this true? Or had someone tipped you off? Or are you just messing with Kara?
No. I mean, you can, you know, we have to take, you know, the a tire test extremely serious, because that's something that we're choosing, we're making, we're responsible for what the tires that they're going to make for the entire year. And, you know, there's a lot of things on the line. Firestone reputation, my reputation. So, no, I really did. Obviously, at the time, she doesn't want to tell you things, because it's really a tire test, guys. It's like a test for us. Like, I want to get this right. You know, they don't tell you, oh, this is what we have. This tire is softer than that. They are all black, and they put it in. Put the tires in. Tell me what you feel. So, no, it really happened. And, you know, to the course of my life, I've enjoyed it a lot doing that. And I'm glad that, you know, nowadays I still do a lot for them, which is awesome.
Well, I've mentioned this in the past. While working for one of the smaller IRL teams, we became one of Firestone's official test teams. And at the time, Tony, it really pissed off some of the bigger teams, wondering why this little tiny outfit with Greg Ray driving was getting this very prestigious opportunity from Firestone. And it was for this exact reason. We might have been a really small team, but we had a really good driver. Our primary race engineer was phenomenal, and the two of them were just able to provide excellent feedback. So to your point, they're not just testing tires, they're testing you. And if they don't feel them the right info, you're not going to be, I mean, we were earning a ridiculous amount of money per lap too. It was part of our annual budget, actually. But yeah, you got to perform if you're going to be a test driver.
And that's what happened. I mean, AJ4 Racing has actually never done a tire test prior to my arrival to the team, and we've done 4 this year, so that's exactly the case.
Wow, that's brilliant. All right, here's another fun one. So our pal Dean Ackerman posted a photo of you in your Tasman Indy Lights car from 96, I believe, where you had the letter K on the side of your helmet. All right, so Dean's question is, you're one of the racers who's basically kept the same helmet livery during your career, just using different color brakes on the same helmets. What's the story behind this design, and what made you switch from the oversized K?
That was a promotion from a fan. So we did that thing, design my helmet for one race. And that's what it was. So that's why, that's the only time I've changed my, apart from when I raced Ruben's helmet at the 500. But yeah, it was a, we did a, this quiz on the internet, and people, actually not on the internet, that time it was on TV. We they submit the design, and I picked one, and then I raced with this guy design, and then I gave the helmet back to the guy after after the race.
Wow, that was a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Let's see, we got a
question. That was with the Brazilian TV.
Ah, nice. We got a question here from Shay Small from Down Under, who asks, has there been any new progress in talks about a return to the Gold Coast? And Shay, our guest next week will be IndyCar CEO Mark Miles. So we'll actually pose that.
Save that question to him. Because,
exactly.
I mean, the only thing I can tell you is I love the idea. I love that place. I hope we do. But I'm not sure how true or how deep in conversations they are. I know for a fact, I can tell that the rumor came out that Brazil was back in the loop, and I can tell that it's not true.
Yeah, and I've the other thing,
unfortunately,
the thing I've heard, which I've been getting conflicting info on, is that Edmonton, a second stop in Canada, mm-hmm. is making serious progress. So that's
all
another
right.
thing I'm chasing down. But Shay
more
asked,
races, the better.
I know. Well, Canada too. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Shay asks if you have any favorite memories of your time or a good story to share while racing at the Gold Coast.
Oh man, it was always fun. I remember, you know, when Greg was still alive, Greg Moore, we used to go there like 2 weeks before the race. We used to race in Vancouver, actually. It was the race before Surface. And we would go there and just doing bike, motorcycle rides with Mick Doohan, you know, because Mick was from there, you know.
Wow.
Multi-champion. And, you know, my favorite memory was, I'm not very good on a motorcycle, so, and I know my skills, so I decided not to ride the bikes because I knew I was going to get crazy. I decided to hop on Mick Doohan's back seats. And at one point, just to explain to you guys how difficult that was for me, yeah, he tapped me in my helmet and said, dude, can you stop squeezing my stomach, because I'm running out of breath, because I was squeezing him so hard. So that is one of my favorite memories there for sure.
Wow. Let's see. Where should we go next? Jack Homan says, Tony, congratulations on your Indy 500 victory. You look great on the trophy. We've got a couple of folks asking similar questions here, like Jack's. Says, if you had an era to race in other than your own, would it be in the past or would it be in the future? We've had some folks also ask if you have a favorite car you've raced throughout your career. So just curious, back in time?
Back in time, for sure. I mean, that is no doubt. AJ Foyt days, Mario Andretti days, you know, like that would be on the 60s and 70s for sure. No doubt.
Christopher,
favorite race car?
Yeah.
I mean, the one that wins, that's always my favorite.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. But I have to say, I had a blast with the 4GT, and I still do. Just for the history of that car, but also the way that that car, the new car drives, I love it.
And so
that is definitely my favorite car.
That's one of the things I love about the TK, is I think so many folks would expect you to only look to your open wheel career, but the fact that you find a way to enjoy everything you drive. I'm not saying every car you've driven you've loved, but you find something that you can really sink your teeth into.
Well, I mean, I think that, but that shouldn't be, you know, thanks for the compliment, but in my opinion, when growing up, I decided to be a race car driver. I want to be an Indy car driver, but at some point I had to cope with the idea that that might not would happen because of many reasons. So I wanted it to be a professional race car driver. And if you're a professional race car driver, you drive anything that has four wheels, a steering wheel, and an engine. So that's why I enjoy every sort of you know, racing cars for sure.
Christopher Page asks, do you and Elio still socialize off track? And if so, what does that entail? Since we've, I guess, lost the old man to sports cars.
We talk all the time. I mean, just to give you an example, there's this new app called Cameo that you can actually request people to, you pay like $20, $25, and you send us a message, and we'll record the message on a video so you can gift somebody saying, you know, I want to gift Marshall Pruitt. I said, hey, guys, I'm Tony Kanaan. Robin Miller sent me this message asking to congratulate Marshall Pruitt on his podcast, and I'll send it to you, and you can have it. So that's a big kick nowadays. Elio made his account on this app, and as soon as I saw it, I like, boom, I paid $20, and I made him say that Tony Kanaan was the best driver in the world. So, and I have it. And it's, if you go to my Twitter account, you guys can click it and see it. So, yeah, we talk. Oh, we go to dinner quite a bit when we see each other. And obviously, we don't see each other as much. But, yeah, we're better friends now than we were when we were racing.
I love that. And, B, I'm going to – I know I have – a couple of $20 bills I can spare. We might need to ask folks what kind of crazy things we want Tony to say, or I'm sorry, Elio to say, and he's going to regret this immediately. You know, this is a really nice question that it maybe takes things in a little bit of a different direction, Tony, back to your AGR days when you and Dario and Dan and Herta were such famous, you know, pals and teammates. Our pal Jerry Bundle says, Tony, there appears to be a very genuine and lasting bond of love and friendship between you and your AGR teammates. He said, I'd love to hear your reflection on how those relationships have impacted the rest of your life and career.
Man, that was the best days of my life. If we can call, you know, if you can pick, you know, we always have our favorite years, right? And those, I have to say, at the time, I don't think we value the friendship, but I don't think we realize how special that was.
Yeah.
I remember Michael Andretti telling me, you guys have something really special. You might not realize that now, but you will later. And, you know, it was great days. I think we started a trend. I would like to say, not trying to be vain or anything, but Penske has a pretty good relationship. The guys have a pretty good relationship now, but we started that. You know what I mean? The four of us, and it was extremely special. What I took from that, and I think we kind of changed, especially in IndyCar, a little bit of the view of a quote unquote of teammate, right? Mm. Because your teammate used to be your first rival, the guy that you gotta beat because he has the same equipment, same information, blah blah blah. And I think we kind of changed that. And you see nowadays how good, how they get along much better. You know, you see Hinch and Wickens. I mean, they were friends from before. So that's something that I think we kind of started and made it more vocal, for sure. And it made me realize that you can still race people really hard. And it's fine to be selfish to want to win, but you can still make good friends and that will last for a lifetime. And that is the biggest lesson I took out of that time that we spent together.
Magical stuff. Truly magical stuff, having admired it from afar a little bit. Let's see. This is just a nice comment from Mark Brown, who says, Tony, both of my boys picked you as their favorite driver as little kids. They're now 16 and 26, and you've not disappointed them on or off the track. And for that, congratulations and thank you. See you at Road America.
All right. Well, come say hi. And obviously, made me feel a little old. But nowadays, it's something that I really I take a pride on, having old fans and young fans that are old now. They were, you know, were young at one time. And my biggest concern is to keep that reputation, Marshall. Today, I have kids. I have four kids that I think they look up to me. And you know, when you become a public person, you have to be careful with your actions and reactions. So to me, I'm extremely humbled that you know, people look up to me, not to just the Tony Kanaan race car driver, but the Tony Kanaan person as a person.
Got all kinds of fun birthdays this month. I mean, we're recording this on the 5th. It's Hinch's birthday today. You've got yours later in the month. I add another year to the old clock here in a couple days. So yeah, we're getting older. It's just cool to know that our either our friends, our fans, our readers, our rivals, we're all together, man, moving forward. Let's see. Ed Joris has a question. He said, Simon Pagenaud was recently talking about the ability to adjust the engine braking on the Acura Daytona Prototype International. He says, does that mean it's not adjustable for IndyCar? And he also asks, what features of the Ford GT that you race do you wish were available to you in IndyCar?
It's not the engine braking. It's only adjustable on those cars. We don't have that luxury in IndyCar. We can play with the idle of the engine, which, you know, helps you. You lower the idle, so when you lift, you have a little bit more of engine braking, but it's not like that. And that's not because of technology. It's because of a rule. You know, we try to keep the cost down and invest in other things. So, we don't have it. And what I would like to see in IndyCar that we don't have, honestly, I mean, it's nice to have all the technology on the Ford GT. We have traction control, ABS, all those kind of things that we don't have in IndyCar. But we actually went away from that in IndyCar. So I think nothing, to be honest. I think I love the way that the IndyCar is the way it is, and I love the Ford GT the way it is.
Well, amen to that. All right, so we've got a little over 10 minutes left to go here and about 3 hours worth of questions left, so I'm going to have
to... We can do a podcast number two later on.
Well, no worries, brother. Well, how's this? As long as I'm doing this podcast, you know I'm going to bug you a couple times a year, but let's just be smart with our time because I know you got other things to do. Let's see. I'm going to pick and choose a little bit here. Jordan Darwin asks, Tony, are there any rides you've been offered in the past that you haven't been able to take up that maybe you can talk about, or teams or other series and such? Curious what little kernels might be hidden away that you might be able to share.
I got back in 95, I got a proposal to replace Emanuele Pirro at Audi.
Really?
Not replaced. Piero was going to race Audi in England, and they want me to do the Italian Championship, and I chose to come to do Indy Lights. So that was a big one, a big decision for me, because it was a pretty decent deal, and I was probably going to be an Audi driver, you know, for the rest of my life. But I wanted to do IndyCar, so I took the risk, and I think it paid off pretty good. And one other thing that people probably didn't know, but in 2010, at the end of 2010, when I left Andretti, I was in talks to Kyle Busch to do trucks. I was going to do the truck series for him.
Ooh. Well,
but then I signed a deal with Jimmy Vassar, and we won the 500 together, so I think that worked out even better.
Yeah, I would say let's not change your history. You're doing okay here. Let's move to our next category. Again, just in the interest of time and getting to as many as we can, let's go here to Donald Gowron. Thanks, Don. This is a great one. Tony, with Lauren and you always growing your family, how much longer are you going to need to keep racing just in order to get all your kids through college, driving schools, et cetera, et cetera? So, I mean, part of me thinks, and this is, it's a little bit of a conspiracy theory, I think you keep having kids so you can extend your driving career for this purpose. Oh, honey, I got to keep, you know, a couple more years. We got to pay, you know, got to earn more money. I think that's your secret plan.
That's an excuse for sure. But I don't think, to answer his question, I don't think I have a lifetime on me if I want to pay for all that in this life. So, you know, funny because I was having that conversation with AJ the other day, and he's like, I raced until it was, you know, 658 or something. I'm like, I'm not doing that, you know. But, you know, I mean, we got to pay bills, and that's if that's what's going to keep me racing, I'll keep making one kid a year. I don't care.
That's brilliant. Justin Brockwell says, Tony, never quit. Keep driving Indy cars until you're at least 53. So, see, maybe not 58, but 53.
I'll say, you know, until I'm 40, 46, I can promise it. After that, I don't know.
Okay. Keith Lee, coming off of our podcast last week with our friend Larry Foyt. Keith says, Larry mentioned last week's show that he hopes Tony stays with the team after he's done driving to help develop drivers and the team. He's curious if you would be interested in doing that, if some sort of role like Dario's opens up with the Foyt program.
100%. And when I signed with AJ, I told Larry and AJ that day, I said, I came here to change things because I think you guys deserve better than what you're doing, but also I came here to retire here and stay here. So 100%. I love them. I love the family. They're really cool people, like very, very fair people, which is hard to find in racing sometimes. People that are loyal to you, you know, that they will go to, like, to battle anytime. So, yes, the answer is yes. I would love to be part of that team as long as that team exists, and as long as that team wants me there. And it's funny because the other day I was doing an interview. A very common question is when I'm going to retire, right? I kind of like, you know, I think you guys saw my article last week on IndyCar.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of annoying sometimes because, yes, I mean, we're going to go through the stats. I don't deny that I haven't won a race in a while and this and that. But if racing was all about that, then I think there's a lot more into it. People have no idea what the challenges that we have with a small team like we are. But anyway, we can talk about this for hours. But when I said that, AJ turned to me and says, you're going to retire when you wanted to retire. You have a job here as long as we can provide you a race car. So that's awesome. Think I ever heard that from a boss, you know, in my entire career. So
that's amazing. We had someone else ask, have you driven any of AJ's bulldozers yet? We know how passionate he is about that.
Yeah, I was in Texas last week and he didn't let me. So no, I have not. I guess there's a reason for that.
See, you got to put in a few more years. You haven't been with him long enough, I guess. You got to earn,
you know. I think he's afraid that I was going to beat him on the bulldozer.
Ooh,
or something, you know?
Now that's a video we need to see, a bulldozer race between you.
No, I don't need him to get hurt, Marshall. He hurts himself every week already.
But he'd probably tip you over if you aren't careful. So, yeah.
100%.
Let's see. Last question on the kind of career link theme, and I like this one. David Nixick says, Tony, you appear to be as motivated as ever to win. Are there any particular goals that drive you? And will you stop, do you think, when they are achieved, or will something else dictate the end of your career? And again, I know you've answered some of these parts, but is there something, a particular fire?
The goal right now is to make, no, I don't think a race car driver. I mean, I made that mistake once in 2013. I thought if I win the 500, I might hang up, and that didn't happen. It just motivated me to do more. So, no, my motivation right now of winning is making Foyt a winning team. Mm. After that, I'm pretty sure I'll find something else, you know, to make me keep going. So not really. I think, like I said on my interview last week, I'm pretty sure I'm a very emotional guy, so I don't think I could take it. Like, remember when they did the Arrivederci Mario?
Yeah.
You know, like you do, like Jeff Gordon did. I think I wouldn't even start a race. I would be crying so much. I would be so emotional about it. I think the day that I decided to do it, I'm just going to wake up and I'm going to say, that's it. You know? This is it. But because I don't think I can take all the festivities if I'm still involved. I mean, I wouldn't mind if people would do something later. But like during my racing year, starting every race knowing it's the last one, I think it would actually mess me up a bit. So
just keep this.
But no, I mean,
keep this in mind. At some point in your future, after you have retired, you know that there is going to be a Miller and Pruitt roast of Tony Kanaan. That.
No, I'm not worried about that. I know that for sure that's going to happen. So I'm ready.
I'm thinking that's a motivation to keep driving, so you don't have to endure that kind of hell. All right, let's move to our last couple of items here. This one we'll move over to a new category on the Foyt team itself. Howard Bennett says, "What did you learn from your first season that you'll take into next season and hopefully achieve greater success?" And then John Scheidler asks something similar. Says, Tony, what is something that surprised you in a positive way this past year at Foyt?
So the first question, what I've learned, we learned so much. I don't think there's one thing that I can take point and say, you know, I've learned that, which I've done it before, because when we raced it for KV, Jimmy and I, we had so much, conversations about it and how much we struggled. And I think I've learned to be patient and not to listen to what people's opinion are about what we're doing there, because that's something that sometimes, especially nowadays, that you can hear everything through social media. People get extremely brave behind a device to offend you, you know, and to have an opinion about what you should do and what you're doing and this and that, that to keep it straight. I mean, I've learned how to not to listen or care as much when people have bad things to say, because actually this was the year that I struggled the most in my career in IndyCar. It was my worst championship result. It was a year, the first year that I never got a podium in IndyCar since 98. So that's something that, you know, made me learn a lot. And the second question, Marshall, I'm sorry, No worries.
It was just, was John Scheidler asking, is there something that surprised you in a positive way this past year about Ford?
How loyal my boss is when he likes you. You can't, it's funny because even sometimes it is your fault, but he tries to make it that it's not, which coming from AJ, you would expect the completely opposite, you know, saying you and you know, when he's really good at when he sees you down, when you're like, because he's being a driver, when you made a mistake, he grabs you and says, hey, don't worry about it. But you know what? I guess the car was bad. That's why that happened. So, no, AJ, no, that was not the case. It was me. No. I bet you it was. I said, no, AJ, it was me. So that's something that, I mean, and again, I think some people can say just because I'm driving for him or something. I was always a fan of AJ, and I think there's not a single person that loves racing that is not a fan of AJ for one reason or the other. But the guy, like I said, I'm very emotional. I get really attached to people. I mean, he's somebody that I'm so glad that I got a chance to go work for. And that is no regrets in my career, but if I had one, it would be why I didn't go drive for this guy earlier.
And I can vouch. I mean, you've been telling Robin and I for a number of years behind the scenes that whenever
you guys
wanted
know
to go
the
there,
truth because it's
you
easy
wanted
for me.
To go.
Exactly. I haven't said that because I got the job. I mean, it's been at least 4 or 5 years that I've been sniffing around trying to figure out a way to make it work. And then I mean, Larry can tell you that I left him hanging the year before this year. You know, I almost left Ganassi a year earlier to go to him, and it didn't happen. So he still holds that against me. So.
Well, let's jump to our last section here, and again, saved hopefully the most fun for last, and that's pranks. So you have a reputation, young man, about being a bit of a funny person. Robbie Bergeron says, "What's the best prank you've pulled on Mateus Laced so far?"
And Mateus, so far, it's been really light because we had a lot of work to do this year. But at the media day in Phoenix this year, I showed up with that wig. I think you guys saw the picture.
The best.
And he had no clue that was going on. So it was pretty funny to see his face. The funniest part was actually when I went to buy the wig, I had his picture. And then I actually showed the lady at the wig place. I said, listen, I need a hair like this. And she bust out laughing. She said, is that a wig? I said, no, this is a real hair. So far, that's what it's... but it's going to get worse. I promise you guys it will get worse.
That's another hope I have for Mateus in his second year in IndyCar, that he, you know, starts thinking of what he can pull on his teammate here. Let's see. Tom Cottle asks a question that, I don't know, this might be risking life, but he says, have you pulled any pranks on AJ yet?
No, you don't do that. You don't. No. And it's not happening. You gotta have respect to the old man. You can't do that. On Larry, I will for sure, because I have an episode that I was after my fueler that used to work at Chips, but now he was actually not. He was not even working in racing. And I called him. He's like, I don't know if I want to come back to race. And, you know, his name is Todd. You know Todd. Todd was at Penske. Yes, he was at Penske last year. He is actually with us this year. So I'm bothering Larry and doing this three-way and trying to, like... So anyway, to make a story short, I call Todd. Todd says, I'm coming. I love the idea. I love to go to work for you and AJ, blah, blah, blah. I said, perfect. So I called Larry. I said, Larry, now you have to call Todd and make sure that, you know, you guys straighten out. I'm not talking about money and vacations and this and that. So Larry says, no worries, I'll call him right now. He called me back 15 minutes later and said, well, man, I'm so sorry, it didn't work it out. And I figured I really had worked it out, everything he wanted, Ed, you know, like
super easy,
whatever request he had, super easy. I said, why? Well, I mean, I called the guy, he asked me for 2 weeks pay vacation in Vegas, for me to pay for his hotel rooms in Vegas, for his gambling, because he has a gambling addiction. I'm like, what? So I hung up on, I didn't even let him finish, pick up the phone, call Todd, and I said, Todd, are you kidding me, man? You think I'm like what is it? What's wrong with you? And he played along too. I was livid. I mean, I had my blood pressure, and obviously 5 minutes in, he actually, while I was screaming at him, three-way called Larry, and they both were laughing at me. Like I was so mad. So Larry is due for one.
Good. All right. Well, again, yet another thing we can look forward to in 2019. Well, let's close on this question. Again, in the realm of pranks coming in from Cruel Monk, we've obviously heard about a lot of the great pranks you have pulled on teammates throughout the years. This question is, what's the best prank someone has pulled on you?
Dario and Brian Huerta during the month of May. I don't remember what year. I was doing a live interview for ESPN at the Speedway up at the Pagoda. They showed up with my road bike, which, you know, you guys know I do triathlons. I love it. It's a full carbon fiber bike. It's probably worth $8,000-$9,000. They both showed up holding my bike in the background. I'm like, what the hell are these guys doing? And in the middle of my interview, granted, a live interview, they got a saw, you know, like a chainsaw. And they saw the bike in half, and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't react because we're live on the biggest network. And so that was definitely the worst prank anybody ever pulled on me, for sure.
You know, I think we need to get you, Dario, Brian, maybe a few others together. We need to just do a whole episode on pranks.
We should do a podcast. Yes, all of us. That is, I will do that in a heartbeat. Let's organize that.